All right, it's time for us to begin our class. We have been studying these topics together. Our last time together, we talked about reaching out in service, using that as an opportunity. When we've done all we can with the trials that we have in our life and there's nothing else that we can do with it in that moment, instead of continuing to focus on it, using opportunities of serving others, reaching out in service as a way of devoting our energy to something else. What I want to talk about tonight is we need to check our friends when trials come, when things go wrong, problems arise in our lives. We need to ask, who are we talking to first? After prayer, who are we talking to first? Right? Do we have friends? Now, this, I guess, when you look at this, it could be interpreted: things are going wrong. Which one of my friends is making my life difficult? That's not where we're going with this. That's another class altogether. But this is, you know, using your friends as a resource. What a problem arises, who do I go to? Who do I talk to? After I've prayed about that, after I've gone to God about this, do you have somebody to turn to? Do you have a support network? And we'll talk about that as well tonight. Woe to him who is found friendless when trials come. And you can, maybe you've been in that situation. I know I have been in a situation where I didn't know what the next step was. There was this thing that was happening in my life, and I didn't know what the next step was. And it took somebody else to help me process that, go through that, and just see what is the next step, what's the next thing I need to do in order to, you know, process, get through things. So we know the power of friendship. We know how important that is. And so we'll be talking about several ways. Let's go to Scripture first as we look at these things. The righteous is a guide to his neighbor, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. And this can be looked at in both ways, as far as having a friend who is a righteous friend. How many of you get advice at work or hear people giving advice at work? Have you heard that? Have you heard advice that's not so good? Like you're sitting there in your cubicle, minding your own business, punching that, you know, doing whatever it is you're doing, and you hear over here a conversation, and they say, well, you should just do this. You know, you should just do this. You know, just, you know, whatever that is. And you're sitting there doing your thing, and you're like, oh no, that's not good advice. Right, you've heard unwise counsel. You've heard that before. So we need also, we need to have people around us. We need to be, but we can also be a righteous guide. So look, we can look at this in both sides, in that we need to be the guide. And so we need to look at this as far as this says, as a guide to his neighbor, but the way the wicked leads them astray. That is a neighbor, that is a person has gone to them. This next, a friend loves at all times. No matter what. Do you have a no matter what friend? Somebody that no matter what happens, I can call them up. I can say, hey, I need your help. You can't ask what it is. You can never talk about it again. No, not that necessarily. But somebody that you can go to, some of you guys are looking at me like, what are you talking about? Somebody you can go to when things are really rough. And maybe that somebody that you have vetted with smaller things, right? You've worked up to this. And so we need to make sure we have somebody that loves us no matter what, that can talk to us no matter what, and we can get to them. Would you say this is true? Would you say this is true? I remember we were getting ready to move to Paraguay, and this was the night before, right? The night before. Everything has led up to this. Over a year of preparation, raising funds and getting, we packed everything, cataloged everything in individual boxes. Every box had a catalog, and there was a master catalog list of everything we were shipping, and that had been delivered. And then we were down to our duffels and things that we were preparing to go over, and for at least we knew for 3 months, it ended up being 9 months that we were going to be waiting on their shipment container to come in, because there was a Haiti earthquake, and it delayed our shipping container for 9 months. So we were packing everything, and I was just trying to pack a suitcase, and I, you know, struggled, and somebody came in and just said, just do this, and was just there to help me pack a suitcase. Because I had a lot more on my mind at that moment than just packing a suitcase, right? Have you guys been there? Like, there's so much on your mind in that moment that just the mundane task of packing a suitcase or whatever it is, like, I can't focus on that. I can't, and you need somebody to come in and just, hey, let's do this. And you're like, oh yeah, that's how you do this, right? So you need somebody, that joyful heart, that somebody can come into your life. And then on the flip side, we need to look at being that. So I want to look at this as we go through this tonight. We need to have people like these that we're talking about. We need to have these people in our lives. You need to have somebody like this. But we also need to look at it in, I need to be that person as well. All right, so we can look at both sides of the coin in this. And so a joyful heart is good medicine. And then the opposite, a broken spirit dries up bones. That's probably not a good scenario, right? In any case, if your bones are all dried up, that's not a good scenario. You're not, you know, medically speaking, that's bad, right? So anyway, those are scenarios that we need to be looking for, this kind of person, have this person in our lives. Many a man proclaims his own loyalty, but who can find a trustworthy man? Has it ever happened to you where somebody says, oh yeah, let's get together and do this, or let's do this, and then it never happens? I've been guilty of that too. I've been guilty of that. And that it would be awesome to get together, and then you actually like start planning and trying to do that, and then it doesn't happen necessarily. I can say I've been guilty of that. I apologize if I've said that to you and I didn't deliver on it. But you know, we've been in a situation where maybe somebody really, we really needed them, and it was really a situation where we depended on them, and they never showed up. They never showed up. And so, you know, why is it that, what help is a trustworthy person? Why do we need a trustworthy person in our lives? Somebody to depend on? In relation to trials and tribulations, do you need somebody that's trustworthy, that you can talk to and know it goes nowhere? Like, I can talk to this person, and even their spouse doesn't know anything about what's going on. Like, do you have that person, a trustworthy person? And so somebody that can be that for us. And help us when we need that kind of person. There's all kinds of people we don't need to be around. This passage says, do not associate with a man given to anger, or go with a hot-tempered man. This is great. Well, some of you ladies are in here dating advice. Red flags in relationships. This is a red flag for relationships, and for, you know, vice versa. Guys, if you're looking for a lady and she's angry all the time, red flag, all right? Don't associate with them. But why does this passage say that? Why does it say not to associate with an angry person? You might learn that habit. All right, let me, so you're raising children, right? You have children. Or maybe other people raise children. And other people that are raising children get angry in front of, and so a child sees parent react. All right, in this scenario, I need to curse and throw things, right? That's how I react in this scenario, right? And so that child learns that's the coping mechanism for whatever that scenario is. I curse and throw things, right? So that's how we handle that. Is that healthy? No, obviously not. And even inadvertently, we can pick up that habit. Have you seen angry sportsmen on TV throw things, break things, take their pads off and leave the field? You know, that happens, right? You see that. And is it ever becoming? You're like, oh, they totally needed to do that. That was the right move. Nobody ever says that, right? That's never the right thing. So, again, that's something that we need to stay away from. Where do we see this, or where do we see this concept in the New Testament? What does 1 Corinthians 15:33 say? Be not deceived. What's that? Evil companionship corrupts good morals. And this, it doesn't, you know, I don't need to be around an angry person because I might be angry. Are there other attributes that I probably should stay away from? Yeah, there are other things that, you know, could rub off on us. It is not just angry. You will learn his ways and find a snare for yourself. So do not associate with... So if we're checking our friends, and so here's somebody who gets angry all the time. Are they going to be our go-to person? Probably not, right? Now, if you want somebody to get angry to justify, you know, your anger, they're the person to go to, right? Because you might be able to whip them up in a lather pretty quick by talking, spinning the details in your favor, and then now you have a yes person, and we're gonna fight this injustice because I have a yes person that's gonna come and tell me that I'm completely justified in being angry, right? And that's also a very, very healthy way of coping with things. No, we don't need that kind of friend. So be careful with those that we associate and those that we name our friends, because we can pick people and generally know maybe, hey, if I want a certain answer, I can find somebody that's going to give me that answer. Do we do that? Do we find people that'll justify what we already decided to be the truth? Do you know people call churches, start calling congregations saying, hey, do you guys teach this on this subject? Oh, you don't? Okay, click. And they'll call around until they find the church that believes or teaches what they already presuppose to be the truth, and then they'll start worshiping with them. They've said, hey, I believe this. No matter what Scripture says, this is where I am, and I'm going to find the church that teaches that. That happens. We get those phone calls. Is that, if I'm searching for truth, I'm searching for right ways, is that the way to do it? Probably not. In the same way, in having good friends, we need to make sure that we have friends that are straight up with us on things. So, in light of that, Proverbs 27, better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. What does this mean? What does this mean? Faithful are the wounds of a friend. They might have been through things with you. What's that? They're going to tell you like it is. Even if it hurts, and maybe they've been there with us in that moment, but even if it hurts, they're going to tell me what I need to know. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. They're faithful to you, and they're faithful to God. They're faithful to your better outcome. They're faithful to what is best for you. And they're telling you straight up, girl, don't wear them jeans, right? You know, whatever it is, whatever this thing is. There are people walking around, and you've seen them, that do not have a faithful friend who have not told them they should not be wearing that, right? So we all need a faithful friend, even if they're there to tell us don't wear that. So in this case, better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. We need to find and have that kind of person that's going to tell us straight up if I'm right or wrong, or if I need to rethink something. And we've kind of talked about this element before, but in when things go wrong, I need to go to my friends. I need to make sure I have the friends in place for these things. And part of this is preparation, and we'll talk about that later, but we need to have this friend that's going to tell us what's going on. Deceit for all the kisses of an enemy. They might tell us what we want to hear to our own demise. And so we need to have this person. Things go wrong. Do you have somebody that you call that you know is going to give you wise counsel on an event or a scenario? Maybe not family, because sometimes family will be, you know, sometimes you need somebody that's, again, that kind of person we've talked about before that would tell you straight up, but they're going to give you wise counsel. If you talked about Rehoboam in 1 Kings chapter 12, verses 1 through 11, the nation of Israel was at a turning point, right? The nation of Israel was at a turning point. Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, comes into office. The people cry out for fewer taxes, right? Inflation's too high, fewer taxes, gas prices are too high, you know, that kind of thing. Less taxes. Do you remember what he did? What did he do? Anybody remember? What's that? He pushed harder. But he went to... Yeah, he went to both, right? He went to the council. I think you were saying that he went to the council and, you know, probably his dad's advisors or whatever. That, you know, and they said, hey, be better if you this is paraphrase obviously, but your dad's taxes were kind of high. I mean, we're not going to lie, guys, right? No. We all know. Solomon's taxes were kind of high. It might be good. Like, we'll just dial that back a little bit, throw him a bone, keep the people happy, and then next year we'll make it back where it was, and they'll forget, right? And so they said lower the taxes. And then he went, like you said, to his friends, which we all know our friends on the playground have been like the sages through the ages, right? Playground wisdom has been like pinnacle of man's thought, right? Probably not. How many lessons did you have to unlearn that you learned on the playground? So many, right? So our friends aren't exactly our peers, especially when we're young, aren't necessarily the right source for wisdom. And so he goes to them, and they're like, "Oh, they're just whining. They have deeper pockets than they know. You know, let's bump this up, right?" And so he goes to the people and basically tells them, "You thought taxes were difficult. What happened? The nation split, right?" Wise counsel, the value of wise counsel. When you look at this passage, oil and perfume make the heart glad, so a man's counsel is sweet to his friend. So wise counsel is really, really important. And we've been in a scenario where I don't know, like I said before, I don't know the next step. I need somebody to help me with this. And that the relief that is provided when they give you the next steps and they start laying out a plan for your life. You're like, oh, I've been in a situation like that. And you don't know what to do next. And then when you finally get a direction, it's like a weight just comes off your shoulders. And it's a huge help. And so we need this friend in our life, or we need to be this friend. And you've heard this passage before. How does this work, by the way? How does this work? You rub them together? Sparks? You get sparks? Yeah, so maybe. Do what? Yes, and technically, like a file. How many of you have ever used a file? Not a nail file, but a file, right? A file on metal works only because one of them is softer and harder than the other one. All right, if they're exactly the same strength, guess what? It's not going to work. Like they'll make friction and produce heat, right? But they're not. It's not going to. So this works, technically speaking, when one is a little softer or one's a little harder than the other. I don't have to read too much into this, but it takes two, right, to have this kind of relationship. And maybe I need somebody who's older, who's wiser, in my life to help guide me. And you know what? I can be that to somebody else. I don't think any of us are, in depending on the situation, all of us have different strengths and weaknesses, right, as far as what we're going to be able to do. And so there are people that you might, hey, I have this scenario that I'm dealing with, and I know this person is just like Superman or Superwoman in this position, and so I will go talk to them about this case. But that same person may not be the person I need to talk to in another situation, right? So we learn about, especially in a community like we have here, this congregation here, or any congregation of the Lord's body, you learn each other enough, we know each other enough to know, hey, I have this item that I'm dealing with. I need to go to this person. This scenario matches up with this person. And so I go talk to that person. And that scenario, that person is helping me to hone myself to be better in that situation, right? And so iron sharpens iron. And so this, again, is one way where we can be that to the people, depending on the scenario and what's going on. So we need to have that kind of person in our lives. Ecclesiastes talks about this as well. Where do we see this passage a lot? Where do we hear about this a lot? At a wedding, right? Like this passage, 1 Corinthians 13, You know, those are like the go-to passages, right, for weddings. And so here we see this concept. Again, it takes two in these scenarios to help. Two are better than one. They have a good return from their labor. One will lift up his companion. They keep warm. Two can resist, you know, somebody who's fighting against them. What's interesting here is a cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. I thought we were talking about two. One, me, one, my friend, equals three according to this passage. Where's the third? Does God make an appearance here? Like, it doesn't say God. But if you, like, the context of the Bible, could we not see? Like, if I am a person who is following after God, and my friend who's following after God, and we come together and we help each other, do you think God's going to be there helping us as well? I would say so. I'd say so. Does it matter if my friend or somebody who's trying to help me in my life, especially when it gets into spiritual matters, if they believe in God or not? Does that matter? Is that gonna like skew their counsel one way or the other? Of course it is. That needs to play a part in what we think about as far as who we go to, especially in spiritual matters, people who know these things and are educated enough to help us in these things. Last verse. Would you want a friend like this? We're not going to start singing the song, but do you understand what I'm saying? We have a friend in Jesus, I understand that. But do you want to have a friend that's sacrificial in their time, in their effort, sacrificial in what they would do for you? Do you want to have a friend like this? And we need to also be that friend, turn around and be that kind of person that when we're called on, we can be this type of friend. That you love one another just as I have loved you. Where's that bar? Is that bar down here? That's a high bar, right? It's a really high bar. And so as far as trying to be the best friend that I can be to somebody, that's the bar. That's what we're shooting for. And so we need to make sure that we can do that or have somebody that we know when called upon will do that for us as well. So in preparing for this, I thought about Job and his friends. Right? We can't talk about friends during trials and not talk about Job and his friends. By way of remembrance, God says, "Have you considered my servant Job?" Which, by the way, just take a pause and think about that concept. God of heaven said, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is none like him in all the earth. He was just and upright." That's a good place to be, right? That's a good place to be. Job was in a good place. When you look at this passage talks about where he was and what he lost. And then just boom, 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 boom. The loss that he suffered. Let's look at Job. Open this up. We're going to be here for a second. What did he lose, ladies and gentlemen? Do you remember? He lost everything. Except his life. He had seven sons and three daughters. Wind came in, the house fell down upon him. Right? They were inside drinking wine and having a good time. He had 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and then servants and all that kind of stuff. Lost it all. All of it. One fell swoop.
And his wife?
Yes. And you know, we talk about his wife, right? She lost 10 children. And she says, "Curse God and die." What was Job's response to her? Yeah, so his response to her, you know, is that you talk like one of the silly women. And then he goes into that. Shall we not have blessing and not, you know, cursing as well from God? So So yes, in verse 22, through all of this, Job did not sin, chapter 1, verse 22, nor did he blame God. All right, so Job, a just and upright man. God knew that this was going to be the outcome if this was going to happen. We won't get into all the, we don't have time to get into the details. Don't get lost in the weeds. We're trying to get to Job and his friends. But look in chapter 2. It's chapter 2, verse 9, that his wife says, do you still hold fast to your integrity, curse God, and die? But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we not indeed accept good from God and not accept adversity? And again, in all this, Job did not sin with his lips, which we know how difficult that is. And it's verse 11 that the three friends come on the scene. Now when Job's three friends heard of all his adversity that had come upon him, they came each one from his own place, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamite. And they made an appointment together to come to sympathize with him and comfort him. And when they lifted up their eyes at a distance and did not recognize him, they raised their voices and wept. And each of them tore his robe, and they threw dust on their heads towards the sky. And they sat down on the ground with him for 7 days, 7 nights, no one speaking a word to him, for they saw that his pain was very great. Job's friends started off awesome, right? Awesome. If you're in a situation like Job, you're in a situation like this. They heard. They heard what was going on. Now, they didn't just hear and say, oh, poor Job, he's such a nice guy, right? He didn't really deserve that. But they heard with an ear to do what? To do something. They heard and they came. They were there. They didn't just, you know, happen to show up at the same time. They coordinated this event. We're going to be there for Job. Did they show appropriate emotion?
Not that you, because sometimes you shouldn't say anything.
But they showed emotion, right?
I
meant. Yeah, yeah, they showed appropriate emotion. Yes, sir.
They were quick to hear and they were slow to speak.
Yes, they were. And they should have left it at that, right? So they were quick to hear in this about the situation, slow to speak. They got there. They wept and mourned with him. And sometimes we don't know what to do, right? In this kind of scenario, we might not know what to do. But mourning with the individual is perfectly warranted. They showed the appropriate emotion. They showed solidarity with Job. They sat with him. They were there with him. They stayed for 7 days and seven nights, which is a biblical number, right? They stayed with him, and they didn't talk. They didn't say anything. Yeah, they didn't talk. If they had left it at this, if they had just left it at that 7 days and seven nights and had gotten up and left after that, Job probably would have been in a better place. It would have been a shorter book, right? But they had to, you know, pontificate on what they thought was going on. And so this is what they did right. These are the things they did right. And we can look at, as far as we need somebody to do this for us, or we need to be able to do this for other people, and we can say these are right things that were done for Job in this scenario. What did they do wrong? Yes, they started to talk about things they didn't know what they were talking about. They started saying things that were not appropriate. Look over in chapter 16, beginning in verse 1. Then Job answered, "I have heard many such things. Sorry, comforters are you all. Is there no limit to windy words? Or what plagues you that you answer? I too could speak like you if I were in your place. I could compose words against you and shake my head at you." So do you know that they were talking about, well, your kids were just evil. Your kids were just, they were bad. That's why they died. Even if that were true, does it matter at that moment? Is that going to help Job in that moment? No. When somebody's going through something like this, it's not time to like pick everything out and find a reason about, well, this is what happened. No. You're just there to mourn with them. You're just there to help them get through it, not to pack on top of them what they already feel. They were horrible comforters. So what did they do wrong? They spoke. They didn't need to say anything. Look over in chapter 19. How long will you torment me and crush me with words? These 10 times you have insulted me. You are not ashamed to wrong me. If we don't know what to say in the moment, and sometimes we don't, it's all right not to say anything. Do not decide, well, I'm going to pull out a Hallmark standard answer everybody says. Because you don't know the details of whatever that person's going through. You don't know all the details. You might know a little bit, but you don't know everything. And sometimes saying things is worse than not saying anything at all. And they also misrepresented God. Look over in chapter 42. God turns on them. Chapter 42, verse 7. It came about after the Lord had spoken these words to Job that the Lord said to Eliphaz the Temanite, "My wrath is kindled against you and against your two friends, because you have not spoken of me what is right as my servant Job has." You haven't said what was right about me. What are some cliche things that people say about God when they're going through trials that are not accurate about God? It's His will. Have you talked to God on the phone? Do you know it's His will? No, you do not know it's His will. I've heard people say that and hurt people, hurt their concept of God. I get a little bit angry about that because I've seen it hurt people. God's punishing you. Was God punishing Job? No. He may have felt like it, right? But he wasn't. No. You've not spoken what's right about me. They talked and they spoke incorrectly about God. So we need to be careful about how we are as a friend. And sometimes we don't need to talk. Yes, sir. Yes, exactly. That's Job 38:2. Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? There are lots of people out there who do that, right? Who hold God accountable for things that God's not accountable to. Who speak about God in ways that are inappropriate and speak about God in ways that are never accurate. And so, that is a very accurate statement. It's man's misconception of who God is and us dealing with things and trials on earth. And so as we look at this. They misrepresented God here in what they did. A man who has friends must himself be friendly. And as we've been talking tonight, we've been talking about how not only do we need to look for this, these attributes, but we also need to be this to other people. We need to be people who are encouraging. Do you have a Barnabas in your life? Do you have somebody who is that encourager to you? We need to be a good listener, not somebody who's just waiting for your turn to talk, somebody who's honest, as we talked about, who doesn't interfere necessarily, right? You can give counsel as a friend, but is it our job as a friend to go in there and make them do what you told them to do? No, it never really works out very well, does it? What's that? Yes, it's that person. That person needs to make that decision and do that thing. So we give counsel where we can. Praise people as much as you can to be this kind of friend, to be there in tough times. Remember special days. Do regular check-ins. And be a kind of friend that they can let their guard down around you. We're around people in the general populace, right? And there's a certain mask or face you put on to be in Gen Pop, right? Around just people and everybody, right? It usually has a smiley face, right? Everything's fine face, usually. Unless you hadn't had coffee that morning. And then it's all up in the air. You have no idea if it's going to be a smiley face or not. But you have that kind of... But then there are people you can be around that you can just let your guard down. And you can talk about things and maybe that you wouldn't talk about everybody. And it's not... You know, is it appropriate to tell everybody the same thing about everything that's going on in your life? Why would that not be appropriate? What's that? Well, there's gossip, but I mean, as far as like I can talk about myself to anybody I want to, but do I need to share everything about me to everybody? TMI, yes, exactly. Too much. There are people who can handle things, and there are people who are not ready at that moment to handle maybe something, right? So there's people you go to and people you don't. And so we find those people that we can let our guard down and talk to them about those things. And if you're going to find somebody to talk to who's going to help you bear your burden, as we see in Galatians chapter 6, verse 2, I know that sometimes we might find somebody that, hey, this person's really been a huge help for me, and I go to them. And that person may not say anything, but maybe we need to share the love a little bit, right? And not go to the same person every single time. But find a person, maybe find several people. You look at your family, if you have somebody in your family, friends, obviously in the church, that's a great place, a resource, because we're all striving for the same goal in the same way with the same moral code, compass. But part of this also is knowing people's limits. Like we said before, not everybody's wired for 220, right? People have different abilities and different strengths. And we also have to make sure that we might have a point person. Somebody that we can go to that points us in the right direction. Maybe they're not the person that handles or helps us with something that's going on in our life, but they can point us in the right direction. I have somebody like that in my life. I can go to them and say, hey, here's what's going on, so you might want to talk to this person, or you might want to consider this and go this direction. Just somebody who can help us find the right resources. And then offer support to others. And this kind of goes back to what we talked about last time about how helping and serving others. If we've been in a certain scenario that somebody else is going through, and we can provide similar support and help to others. It's very, very, very good. It's part of healing as well. So these are ways to people that we can look to and be thinking about. Here's somebody that can help me, but I need to be thinking about these things as well when I go to somebody. Any thoughts, questions, comments, considerations? Yes, sir. Dirk, you're going to get me in trouble, bro. You can't just be talking about that. Peace. Anything else? Yeah, that's a thought and comment. I guess I was too open-ended, wasn't it, Dirk? All right, thank you very much for your time tonight. I appreciate it.